Well, good morning. You might not know the inner workings of the West Irwin front office. For example, I was told that I was needing to preach at this time, and I said, great. I was told that a month ago. I spent a long time going through sermons, going, which one I'm really passionate about and all that. And you have to turn those sermon subjects in around Monday and Tuesday. Well, I got it to Pat on Tuesday. You will notice that the outline is very long because I thought I was going to have around 25 to 30 minutes. By Thursday, my father, who's one of the elders here, calls me and he says, Jay, so we're announcing the new preacher and I'm sorry to say Wade's going to be doing that. So as soon as he told me that, I knew what he was saying. The one thing that me and Wade have in common, we like to talk a lot. So I said, okay, so what are we going to do? He goes, well, you're going to have to dumb it down in about 10 minutes. And I said, do you have any idea the big outline that I just turned into Pat? And he said, I know, but you're professional. You can do it. So we're going to do our best to get through this as fast as possible. What's fascinated about numbers, numbers calculate just about everything from volume to just everything. We use them in our everyday lives. And numbers tell us a lot of stuff, but there are some things that numbers don't tell us, and we're going to get to that. What the church numbers tell us. What do the church numbers actually tell us? Well, in Acts chapter 2 and verse 41, we have our first set of church numbers. The church is born on that day. The gospel is preached and 3,000 respond to the gospel. Now, some have looked at that over the years and go, wow, 3,000 souls saved in one day. That's incredible. And it was incredible. But if you compare numbers with the reality of the numbers of the day, what you'll find out is scholars tell us there could be anywhere from 20 to 30,000 people that heard the gospel, 3,000 responded. It doesn't exactly look very good at that point, but 3,000 souls were saved in that day. So we have our first set of numbers. So what do numbers with us tell us? Well, it tells us Bible class numbers, worship numbers, and who attended, and Wednesday night class. That's what the numbers tell us. How many people showed up? What does the contribution amount tell us? Well, in Acts chapter 2 and verse 45, right after the church is born, we'll notice that inside of the text it tells us that people were selling their possessions. They were giving to anybody that had need. Everything was common property. I was preaching about that one time at a congregation, and I knew a guy in the congregation that had a bass boat, and I looked over at him and I said, now Ted, you got to understand that bass boat is now ours. He didn't keep silent during the worship service at that point. He said, no, it's not. They were constantly giving. One of the studies that we note about the early church is they were givers. They were constantly giving. So we have Sunday morning contributions. We just took up a collection for that. We have memorial donations and we have independent donations. Memorial donations is when somebody passes away and they want to give and in memorial of that. Independent donations, I've heard about stuff like that before where people just, that you know, sometimes it happens with real estate people. They make a bid sale and they'll go to leadership and they'll say, hey, I want to give to this or give to that, and it's very welcomed and it's great, that type of giving. But again, the numbers that we see in the bulletin, the numbers that we see on the boards, they're numbers. They tell us a limited amount of data. So what do they not tell us? What do the numbers not tell us? In Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 14, we have a unique situation. You got a Pharisee and a tax collector that both go into the temple, and Jesus is telling this story. They both go into the temple, And it starts with the Pharisee. The Pharisee raises his hands up to the Lord, raises his head up to the Lord, and he said, "Lord, I thank you that I am not like this tax collector over here. I fast twice a week. I tithe of everything that I have. I do this, I do that." And then he walked away with his chest poked out. And then the text tells us that the tax collector wouldn't even lift his head to God, wouldn't even lift his head to heaven. And he started beating his chest. And he said, "Lord, forgive me, I am a sinner." And according to Jesus, he said the tax collector was the one that actually walked away justified. You see, the number will tell us two were there that day. It doesn't tell us what kind of heart they had that day. Was it a strong heart, number one? Was it a strong heart? Was it a hurting heart? Was it a weak heart? Was it a hungry heart? Was it a humble heart? Numbers do not tell us that, what kind of a heart it is. And I can guarantee you from my years of service, from either guest speaking or full-time ministry, the majority of church buildings are made up. The congregations are made up with hurting hearts. And I want to give you one example of that. It's a personal example. 8 years ago, I came back to West Irwin after I had gone through a divorce. I had lost basically everything. And the hardest thing for me to do, the church that I grew up at, the hardest thing for me to do was to go into this building that first Sunday. The plan was to come in, worship, and get out just as fast as I could. Because in my eyes, I was an absolute failure in every sense of the word. I was hurting. Did I need God? Yes. Did I need Christ? Yes. Did I need the West Irwin family? Yes, I needed the West Irwin family. But I sure didn't want to look anybody in the eye. Now, my parents, I had moved back in my parents at that time. My parents had had the forethought to call a couple of people in the congregation to let them know what was going on with my situation. And there was five of them that met me in the lobby that day. Five of them. Bill Allen, at the time, I had never met before. I only knew him from Facebook. He was there. Donnie Carnathan was there. David Wicks was there. Skipper, as I call him, Skipper was there. And one special woman was there. And she wants to remain anonymous. No, that's not my wife. That was somebody else. What you don't know is that that day would have made me or broken me. That one single day. And by the way, you talk about a God thing going on there. None of those five knew why the other one was there, but they were all five waiting for me, all five there waiting to hug me. Because I was hurting and they knew it and they were there. There is a good chance that if they hadn't have been there and I walked in and I didn't get any type of sympathy or anything at all and I just came in and left, I might have walked away from the church that day because I was that broken. Most congregations are made up of hurting hearts. And I want to remind you of something, is that churches are not museums. They are hospitals for sinners. Sometimes there's a weak heart. Somebody just needs strength. Sometimes there's a hungry heart, people who are craving the gospel. And sometimes there is a humble heart ready to take in all the information that they can. But when you look at the numbers do not tell you that. So be grateful for the person that is next to you. Be grateful for the person that's on the other side of the auditorium. Please get out of your comfort zone if you're not used to talking to a particular kind of person. Because we are all here for one reason. It's to serve our Lord, and we want that one thing that only Jesus can provide, which is peace. The hearts of those who gave. Numbers don't tell us about the hearts that gave. A very interesting story in Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. Jesus sits at the front of the temple. And that's where they actually put the box in order to put people's, you know, donations in there. And so he's sitting there and he's noticing several people are coming in and putting big sum of money inside of the box. And then he notices this old widow woman. She comes in and she takes two copper coins, which basically just amount to a cent, and she drops it in. And Jesus says, "You see that woman over there? She gave more than anybody else here." Which mathematically does not make sense. It only makes sense when we're talking about the heart. Do we honestly believe that this woman gave everything that she had, walked away, and God was going to let her starve or be without shelter or be without clothing? I think we know better than that. You see, the giving amount is what we see. We see the numbers. What we don't see is who sacrificed that week or that month or that year in order to give. We don't see the cheerful heart. We don't see the joyful heart for that matter. In fact, the scripture tells us, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. So we're not supposed to be bragging about how much we're giving or what we gave for that matter. But the numbers don't tell us everything. What was sacrificed during worship? Talking about worship numbers, but you guys are all here, and being all here, you're saying no to everything else in the world, and you're saying yes to this right now. Occupational overtime. Some people here, I don't know who, I'm just guessing with a crowd like this. For those who are listening online who can't see the auditorium, I'm guessing there's about 10,000 people here. But some people here sacrificed occupational overtime. In Acts chapter 20, verses 7 through 12, you see this idea of somebody who was craving the gospel. His name was Eutychus. He was craving the gospel. He's on the third floor of this house. He's sitting in the window. Paul, thankfully, I'm not him, okay? He preached until midnight, and Eutychus falls out of the window and falls to the ground. And what we don't know is if he actually died or not. We really don't know if that was a miracle in itself, but he was okay. But my main question is why was Eutychus that tired? Well, we know from the day he must have been an honest man. Everybody knew him. He must have been hardworking. He could have been a carpenter or fisherman or masonry, something like that. But more than likely, he had worked all day long. But he was craving the gospel, and the guy just fell asleep in a very morbid, comical way, fell out the window. That's another reason why we don't have a balcony here, by the way. Business extra revenue. There are some people who have small businesses, and they've decided, you know what, we're not going to work on Sunday. We're going to sacrifice whatever extra revenue that is. Eating out to give more. There are some people that I have met in my lifetime that they have sacrificed eating out just to be able to give more. You see, you don't see that in the numbers. A day of complete rest. There are some people that work two and three jobs and they're exhausted and they could use a day of complete rest so that they just don't fall over. And some people still come to worship because they want to be with their church family and they want to honor God. Hours of free of joint pain. Hours free of joint pain. I have met those in my lifetime that they are in such joint pain that it's easier for them to sit at home, be in a recliner, and almost not move because the joint pain is so bad. And yet I know there are some, I have met some in my lifetime, that they come to church anyway because it's the right thing to do. But the numbers don't tell us that. The little gas left in the car, you ever had that situation before? I've been broke twice in my life. It took me twice to learn how to ask questions. to figure out how to manage money correctly. And by the way, you got to be humble enough in order to actually take in the information when somebody's trying to give it to you. And I've been in those situations before where you got maybe half a tank left and you got to do something. You have no idea how you're going to put fuel in the tank. And lo and behold, something happens. Why? Because you gave it to God. But there are some people that they drive to church. They don't know where the money, they don't know if there's going to be enough fuel in the tank to get there and back and all that, but they do it anyway. The comfort temperature of the home. There's some people that hurt so bad that they just want to stay in the comfortable temperature of the home. The discomfort of a large crowd. Let me just throw this out here. There are some people who deal with what we call social anxiety, and yes, it is a real thing. And this is something that you actually have to deal with. It's not something you can just say, I'm not going to have social anxiety anymore. It doesn't work that way. And I know of people who still go to church into a decent-sized congregation, and sometimes they even pretend like they're okay when they're not, when in the back of their mind they are just anxiety-ridden like crazy. But you know what? They still come to church because it's the right thing to do. The idea of embarrassment from a lack of knowledge. Some people have to get over the fact that they really don't have the knowledge they think they should have, and they don't want to be embarrassed because they've been embarrassed all of their life. Whether it was in school, whether it was just among friends, whether they said something they thought was truthful and somebody else laughed at them. But there are those that still come to church to learn, even though they feel they might be embarrassed. They have a fear of that. And the last one is sleep. I have known people that have worked 12-hour shifts from 6 to 6, actually where I work. Sometimes people ask me, how come you want to stay a security guard and not a cop? Because the cops work 12s. I work an 8. And by the way, I've got the best schedule on campus because I protect executives. But they work 12s, and some of them will work at night and then get off duty and then turn around and go to church, and they're exhausted. They might have had more problems on campus all night long, and yet they still go to church. But see, the numbers don't tell us that. What was sacrificed during the week? In Acts chapter 2, verses 46 through 47, there was a lot of sacrificing going on during that time. It says that they were constantly meeting in the temple together, breaking bread from house to house. They were constantly selling things, giving it to whoever had need. And the Lord produced their numbers more and more. I want you to think about this. You can look at the numbers all day long of this particular church and what's been given and who actually came to church. But it doesn't tell you the whole story. Because I know for a fact there are people in this congregation who are working during the week that you never hear about. There are people in this congregation who have helped others get through hard times, whether it was physically, financially, whatever it was. There are members of this congregation. What's interesting is, if you've never been over to the Benevolent Center across the street, go over there and take a look. Because, by the way, during the week, that place is hopping. At the same time, everything inside of there has been donated. And so you can see warm heart all over the place. The time individual members, that's something that the numbers that we collect on Sunday don't tell us. The time of individual members that are helping other people. The items donated by individual members. I know for a fact that there are a lot of members in this congregation that help other people out. I know for a fact that during the Christmas time when other families didn't have enough, members of this congregation helped other people out. And what's really interesting is, you know, you don't really learn stuff about people until after they pass away. If you guys don't know, I married into the Walmart clan. That's been an adventure. I love every one of them. It's been great. But I grew up with Ray and Carolyn Womack. They were basically like grandparents at church. They taught me I remember being a young kid and having them in class, and they'd teach me and all that. What I didn't know was the massive amount of things that they did outside of worship and outside of church. The number of kids they took in. The number of families that were hurting and they were there. And you notice I'm saying this, they're both gone to their reward. I can say that now. Because if Carolyn was still alive, then I would be getting to talking to afterwards about this, because she wouldn't want anybody to know. And I say that just to make the point that there are so many of you guys and other church members all over this country, in this world for that matter, that the numbers do not reflect all the great and wonderful things that people do for others. Do I believe the church is dying? No way. One, Christ said that the kingdom could not be shaken. It's not going to die. Will it ever be the biggest organization in the world? Nope. We learned that from Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. It's not going to be the biggest organization. We know that. But if we place everything on the numbers, we have to understand we're going to be disappointed. You cannot place everything on the numbers. Now, next week, Wade's going to get up. I'll be praying for y'all. I've got to be in Frankston next week. I promise. I had that gig set up before I knew Wade was going to do the whole stuff. But he's going to present the budget. He's going to present what you're doing and all that. And that's an important thing for you guys to know. So I'm not knocking that at all. But if we look at everything we do in just the form of numbers, we're going to miss the heart. We're going to miss the purpose. We're going to miss the will to continue to keep going. Numbers are good, but they don't tell you everything. And I just want to leave you with that this morning. Look at people. Look at the individual members that are around you right now and know that they have a heart. They have a soul, and they're trying to get to the same place that you are. And when you look at those numbers in the bulletin about how much money was given, which is fantastic, just remember, some of those that gave sacrificially, some in abundance. And most of the giving is actually done not here, but out there. This morning, if anybody has anything that they would like to pray about, we do want to offer an invitation to anybody who is in need. Whatever you need, please come while we stand and while we sing.